Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week we're excited to bring to you a magical, a joyous, wonderful musical podcast. And I wish I hadn't said that because that kind of implies we're going to be singing. And now I'm going to have to sing and it may not work out well. But it's going to be a great podcast. We're going to be reviewing Disney's Beauty and the Beast, the live one. Just to clarify any confusion there. 2017.
It's a tale as old as time, some would say.
I'd say it's probably a tale as old as 26 years, but...
No, it was a story before then.
It was a story before then? Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I think it's like an old fairy tale.
Well, there you go. It is as old as time, and...
I love how you're like, yeah, it's old. It's older than 26 years. Oh, yeah, must have been. Must have come around when time
was. Yeah.
Oh, it was around before 26.
Either that, if Disney didn't come up with it, it must have been God, him or herself.
Yes. Yes.
No one else could create such a tale. Well, speaking of the tale, I was introduced to it through the animated film. But maybe you knew the fairy tale before the cartoon even came out, Matt. But
I didn't even know. Like, it could have been a story like my mum read to me as a really young kid or something. Like, I don't know what fairy tale books I had, like where it was in the mix. So
yeah, it comes out in 1991, and Matt, who is what, 4 at that time, she's like, oh, not as good as the original. Mum did it better.
Well, I disagree, because I do always think of the Disney film when I hear of this tale, and I like this film has a very special place in my heart, Beauty and the Beast.
Ooh, how special.
Do you know what the significance is of this film for me, Jonathan?
I do not. We've known each other almost since 1991, but I don't know if I know this story.
Yeah, this was the first movie I ever saw in the cinemas.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool. Do you remember it? Were you excited to finally go to the movies?
I remember, like, it is a bit of a blur the first couple of times you go to the movies. Like, you know, it's exciting, you're sitting in the seats. I was a bit scared as a kid, so I'm like, oh, is the beast going to be scary or not? I think was in my head. I was a bit worried. But, yeah.
It is kind of scary when you're young. I remember being actively scared while watching it as a kid. Just that kind of first castle scene where you get introduced to the beast. And I would watch it over and over again for that. Like, as however old I was, you know, 5 when I was watching it on VHS at home, that was like my roller coasters as a little kid. I was like, oh, we're going to watch the scary beast scene in the castle.
Yeah, I loved Lumiere the Candlestick. Up the Be Our Guest song, I loved him. I got a little, like, bendy figure of Lumiere from the, you know, like, from Target or Kmart or something like that, and I was so, like, I remember probably more than the movie I experienced, I remember loving it when I came back from it and getting excited about the characters and, you know, like, and it's definitely a movie that's very big in my memory bank, like.
That's cool. I don't think I can remember the first film I saw at the cinema. I'm going to have to ask Mum and Dad, see if they know. Mm-hmm. I know the first CD I ever bought was Will Smith, Big Willie Style. I'm trying to think that age. I do remember going to a live stage performance of Sesame Street. That was pretty cool. I was pretty excited for that.
Like, did they have all the big heavy hitters, that Big Bird?
Oh, Big Bird. I was super stoked to see Big Bird. I remember Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch. I definitely remember those two.
That would have been so cool.
Yeah, delivered. Well, I don't know if...
I actually went as a kid to see a live show of Sooty. Remember the little bear and dog and panda, like the Sooty show?
Vaguely, not as much as I remember Sesame Street. But I
remember complaining because it was too loud. I was like, sore in my ears, so I had to go out because it was too loud.
Turn it down. Turn it down.
Those sooty shows were off the chart.
Back then. It was like, it was Nirvana, it was Pearl Jam, it was sooty. They were just tearing up the scene back then.
Yeah, and the guy who did the sooty show came out and saw me after and apologized.
Really? Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I should have complained just so I could get to meet Big Bird.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, pretty special. I remember I was at a dinner party a couple of weeks, like earlier in the year, and I said that Beauty and the Beast was the first film I'd ever seen in cinemas. Someone was like, you were very young for your parents to be taking you to the movies. But look, like, what, 4 years old or 5 years old? Like,
yeah. Was Beauty of the Beast inappropriate, or just the concept of being outdoors in a cinema setting is just...
I don't know, it's like life of luxury, like, oh, Matt Noble, his parents take him out to movies at 4, like, I don't know.
Yeah, no wonder your reading skills are so poor. He gave up when you were 4 and started watching the film version instead.
Yeah, well, I think, like, I'm going to be taking my kids to movies earlier. I think, I have a kid, they're going to be movies at 3. Like, or do or something. But there'll be well-reviewed movies. I'm not taking them to see rubbish.
Yeah, you've got to see it first. Anything that's worth re-watching is good enough for your children to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I have a friend that my favorite, my first ever movie that I saw was Beauty and the Beast. And for my birthday 1 year, they got me a book, a Beauty and the Beast book.
So you can finally catch up on those reading skills.
Well, no, because they said they wrote the book. I know you aren't a huge fan of books. So they got me one with a CD in it. So I would dig out the book as I went along. I've got a bit of it right here. You can listen to it.
Oh, nice.
Disgusted by her rags, the prince sneered at the rose and turned the poor woman away. Do not be fooled. Before she left, she gave the prince 2 gifts. To his horse, Philippe, and set off for the fair. But Maurice and Philippe became lost as they rode through the forest. Suddenly, they heard the howling of wolves. Fine talk, son, Chip, agreed. So they gave Maurice some tea, a bite to eat, and a chair to rest in. Suddenly...
That noise is when you turn the page. That's when you know to turn the page.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm trying to find a bit where, like, a character talks. Like, you know, like...
A dreadful beast burst into the room. A stranger! He roared.
Oh, well, I looked this up on YouTube. This is not the one I have, because they actually have the characters' voices from the movie.
You got the high-budget one. The one that has enough lawyers... To pursue the copyright claim on YouTube. Just the cheap version made it online.
My friend Jazz was not shilling out the cheap audiobooks for me. It's only the top of the line audiobook. Yeah. Honestly, I'm looking at what they wrote too. They said, hello, half of the internet. It was also how they opened the messages. That was nice.
Very cool.
All-time favorite gift, that one. But Jonathan, you saw the film as a kid. Like, I've talked about how it's like special because I remember as my first movie. What do you think? What did you think of the original movie?
So I was thinking about this the other day, and I was flicking through the Disney animated films that came out as I was a kid, or. Even before then, and I picked out 3 clear favorites. These are far and away my 3 favorites.
Can I guess them?
I'll give the disclaimer, not including Pixar. So this is just Disney animated films. 3 favorites. What are your guesses?
I would guess it is in no particular order, Aladdin, The Lion King, and Beauty and the Beast.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Well, so here's the thing. So obviously, love Beauty and the Beast. I had it on VHS, just burnt that tape out, watched it over and over again when I was young. Absolutely loved it. As you said,
love. I didn't know that you would love Beauty and the Beast that much. I knew you'd love Aladdin and the Lion King, but I'd like to hear what you thought was so good about Beauty and the Beast.
You know what? I love the opening. I thought it was scary. I love the concept of the beast. I love sort of like getting to know him and the sort of the character under the beast. I thought it was really, really funny. Like Lumiere and Chip. I thought Chip was really cool. And I think the songs were just were some of the catchier songs. Like definitely "Be My Guest" is one of my favorite Disney songs. And so yeah, that along with Lion King and Aladdin and Return of Jafar, were probably the tapes that I watched the most. And I thought, I want you to help me work something out, whether this is an objective choice, whether I've picked three of the best Disney films, or whether this is completely biased, because those films, what are the odds that the three best Disney films came out, A, back to back to back? They were released in 91, 92, and 94. And B, the odds that they all came out when I was between the ages of around 3 and 6, like the prime Disney watching years. Like, am I just voting for those because of nostalgia? Or are you backing me up? Do you think they are three of the best Disney films?
Two thoughts. Thought number one, AA. I think the odds are quite high that the three best would be back-to-back, because mm-hmm. that probably means there's really good talent mm-hmm. in the studio at that time.
I agree.
I think you often see studios have a good run of films. You don't usually think, oh, yeah, they do one in every seven films is good. It's usually they're either on a hot streak or a cold one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, I'd say, this, I think, adds weight. Although it's hard to discount the nostalgia factor, like that does make sense. That is the age you're going to enjoy Disney the most, and therefore, so I think though that Beauty and the Beast was the first ever animated film to get nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. Like it seems like there was critical acclaim behind this film, like there hadn't been for a Disney film before, and there probably hasn't been after. And it's worth noting that the only two other animated films to get nominated, Up and Toy Story 3, were in crowds of 9 or 10 films were nominated those years. Like, Beauty and the Beast was one of 5 films nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. And I think it's generally, like, I don't know. I think, in my opinion, Beauty and the Beast is the best Disney animated film. This is the gold standard for me. I think the music is the best. I think the characters are good. I think I just think it all works so well.
Well, we're giving high praise. I'm putting it in the top three. Matt's saying it might even be number one. Therefore,
no, I'm saying it is number one.
What?
I'm not saying it might be number one. I'm saying it is number one.
It is.
It's just the best.
Lion King sucks. Aladdin sucks. Beauty and the Beast is the best. Disagree with everyone. Okay, well, so clearly number one. Does that mean you were excited, or were you worried? Were you worried it wouldn't live up to that hype?
I'll put it this way. I've never loved a film and then been excited for them to make it again. Like, I love Lost in Translation, but I thought, you know what would be good? If they made another Lost in Translation. Like, I'm not talking about sequels. I'm just talking about, like, hey, let's remake Lost in Translation with different people. Like, that's never gotten me excited. So I can't imagine I was particularly... Like, I don't think I was particularly excited. But at the same time, I like the story. I like the songs. I like Emma Watson. I was keen to give it a go. There was a part of me that was excited to see it. But, loving Beauty and the Beast, I feel like, makes me excited to rewatch Beauty and the Beast, not watch a different Beauty and the Beast.
Well, I agree with that on principle. I'm generally not a big remake, reboot person. And if you'd ask me, you know, take a take a film, Disney film, do a live-action version, are you pumped for it? And my initial thought would be no. But then if we go back to the Disney triple threat, the Holy Trinity, we have The Lion King. Now, The Lion King did a musical, and I actually saw the musical and really, really enjoyed it.
Mm.
Aladdin.
It's very good. It's very good, the music, The Lion King music. I've seen it too.
Aladdin. When we went to, my family, when they came to visit the US, and Bonnie and I went to New York, and we saw Aladdin on Broadway, and I loved that too. So, a little bit different to a film, but these sort of, these live versions of my other two favorites, really, really enjoyed. So that made me sort of dispend my cynicism for a moment. And yeah, I thought, I'll give it a chance.
Yeah, I was happy to give it a chance. I do think, like, though, your examples, like, that's like a stage adaptation, like, you go to a different medium. It's sort of like Harry Potter, like, going from a book to a movie sort of thing, rather than, like, if I was, like, saying, oh, I'm going to write Harry Potter again as a book. Like...
Yes.
But then you could argue animated to live actors. So yeah, we'll go with it. We'll go with it. Mm-hmm. I was happy to give it a
chance. Maybe it didn't pan out. Maybe I was wrong. But yeah. I with on that basis, at least, I wouldn't write it off immediately.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I, like with all movies, don't write them off until I've seen them. at least ones I'm reviewing on the podcast.
So we are going to discuss spoilers. Mostly because presumably you've all seen it. The whole world has seen it. Box Office Mojo is telling me it's done $983 million as of last weekend. So,
and you've pretty much seen the... If you haven't seen it, you've probably seen the 1991 one. And it's a similar story. It's similar plot points. Like, not exactly the same. But so most... And if you don't know the Beauty and the Beast story by now, you're probably... Probably don't mind being spoiled on our podcast.
Nonetheless,
you're clearly not interested.
For tradition's sake, though, we'll give you a quick spoiler alert. All right, spoiler alert. Woo, 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 woo.
Okay, you're the Beast. Some would say a tale as old as to other ears. So,
times linear, man. Not linear, man. I'm not repeating the joke. It's just circling back around.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, the new one. Beauty and the Beast. Belle. Played by Emma Watson. Like, I don't know. Where do we just start with the beginning of the story? Or, like, what should we do, Jonathan?
Yeah, I say we just hit a couple of the major plot points. So, kicking off, it is a great song to start. I did like sort of the design of the town and the costumes. Obviously, they put a lot of effort into that, and I thought, sort of aesthetically, it remained quite true to the cartoon. And I'm not a huge Harry Potter person. I haven't seen a lot of Emma Watson films, so I didn't have a strong opinion beforehand. But pretty quickly, I bought her as the character of Belle.
Okay. Belle. She's singing the song, she's wearing the stuff, and she looks good. Like, I'm not too about attractive, but I'm not saying she's not attractive. Anyway, I'm just saying, like, she looks the part. She looks like Belle to me. This is good. A good opening.
All right. And we are introduced to Gaston. Gaston keeps on trying to... win Belle's affections. What did you think of his character, the actor that portrayed Gaston?
I thought pretty good. One thing I found interesting with Gaston is I feel like more so in the than in the animated film. It's going to be hard not to compare to the animated film the things in this movie. But the thing I thought is, like, he maybe over-explained things. Like, I feel like Gaston was dumbed a bit down in this, like, or, like, he spoke down to the audience a little bit, like, you know, so, like, LeFou would be like, why do you want to go out with Belle, Gaston? She doesn't even like you. Well, the fact she doesn't like me makes me like her even more. And I'm like, got that from the anime film without having to explain that that's why he liked her.
Yeah.
I feel like
I didn't notice that too much, but I definitely follow. Perhaps that's more of a writing thing than the...
Yes, that is true. The performance. So I feel like it was written maybe a bit, he said more than he needed to say, and they didn't back the performance enough to portray those feelings. But I think the actor actually did a really good job. I thought he was really solid.
Yeah, he was actually one of my favourite parts of the film. I thought he was very funny. It was a bit over the top. It was a little campy, it was a little cartoony. But it's based on a cartoon, and so I didn't mind that. I thought...
I didn't mind if this movie's a little bit cartoony, or a little bit over the top.
So I did think he made sort of a... At first, he's kind of like a bit of a comedic nemesis, and then later on becomes, a, I guess, an actual nemesis.
Yeah, like he's a villain.
Okay, well, I guess... You mentioned LeFou... jeez, that gay sex scene, that was pretty full on.
What you're referring to here is there was some controversy over this being the first gay Disney character they've ever had, and controversy probably more, there was one or two countries that thought about banning the movie or ban the movie or something. I'm not saying that having a gay character is controversial, but it did seem like they've got some talk and some notice. I'd say a bit of a much ado about nothing.
In the end, there's a few things that imply it, but there's certainly no gay sex scene. There isn't even a kiss or explicit reference to. So yeah, absolutely much ado about nothing. A great story I heard about this was I believe it was a drive-in theater in Alabama. Could have been Arkansas. Decided not to order the film. We're going, nope, we're not going to play the film because they have a gay character in it, and we don't support that. So we're going to order a different film instead. They ordered a film called Fierce. Sounds cool. Maybe it's an action film. Sounds pretty bad. It's drag queens. Nope, it was about drag queens. Maybe should have read more than the title, so... I did enjoy that story of the week. So LeFou, I thought he was great too. I thought him and Gaston were a really funny pair. He had a couple of funny lines. Just Josh Gad's.
The only gay thing was that he was dancing with the guy at the end of the movie, right? Or did I miss something?
But there were a couple of things that maybe meant that his sort of. His friendship with Gaston was maybe an affection for Gaston. There's something about I know whose team I'd like to be on.
Okay, I missed that.
Which is in the original, so you know maybe that's not a gay thing, but maybe you know just the way it was delivered this time around made it seem more like it. So it was all rather subtle and really just kind of like the looks towards that guy in the dance at the end was really the sort of the most explicit, and even then. I took no issue with it. Whether LeFou in the original was supposed to be gay or not, I had absolutely no problem with the direction they took in live-action film.
I agree. Because Gaston asked him, oh, why don't you have a girlfriend, LeFou? He's like, oh, they say I'm too clingy.
So there you go. We like Gaston and LeFou. I guess let's get to the Beast. One of the two main characters. You have the Beauty and the Beast. As here on screen, Verdict, often referred to as the Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
Not sure who's who, but...
Loaded up hole.
Yeah, hole. Facebook.com/ScreenVerdictPodcast. Matt, what did you think of the Beast?
Okay, I've got a question about the Beast, actually, that I've had from the animated film as well.
What is he?
No, are we meant to like the Beast? Like, this is the thing I sort of find interesting. Because they say, all the, candlesticks and things, in the castle, Lumiere and Cogsworth, Belle doesn't like them.
like, oh, if you just get to know him, you'll, like, learn that he's, like, really soft on the inside. Like, some of that. But the reason he's a beast is because he was a dick. like, he's not this, like, it's not like, you know, Sleeping Beauty, who's this princess, has been trapped in a tower by an evil witch or anything like that. Like, he is a beast because he was a dick. So it's hard for me to understand why it's now, like, sort of, like, oh, he's actually really nice. He's a lovely guy. He looks like a beast, or he's got a bit of a temper. Like, so that thing I always found a bit hard with this story is, like, what am I meant to think about the beast?
In the original, in the cartoon, do you think that scene portrayed him as much of a dick? Is the level of dickness the same?
I think so. Like, we don't see him much before then, but, like, the whole idea is an old beggar woman comes in with a rose, says, I don't have any money, but I need to come in from the cold, and he turns her away. He turns away the poor woman, and then she goes, I'm actually an enchantress, and you are now going to be this.
Yeah, see, I kind of agree with where you're going with this, because while watching the film, during that scene, I thought, oh, wow, like, what a douche. Like, he is... that was much more mean than I remember him being. I don't like this guy. I'm not rooting for the beast.
Yeah.
He deserves to be a beast.
I think it's as mean as in the anime film where they brush over it a bit quicker. They, like, sort of, yeah, this is a beast. This is what he did. And, okay, now Bell. Like...
Because if he'd have been like, no, no, get out. This is a private party. And she's like, I need money. He's like, sorry, don't give money to beggars. Rose, no, I thank you for the rose, but I don't want it. Please get out. It's like a bit of a douchey move, but I don't think you deserve to be turned into a miscellaneous beast. Yeah. But the way he treated her, kind of, you know, mocking her for the entertainment of everybody else, was rather cruel. And I thought, yeah, Enchantress, you turn him into a beast. He deserves it.
Yeah, I do think, like, it is fair to say that, like you could question, regardless of how much of a dick he was, the merits in a, like, enchanting sort of, like, judicial system, or, like, if this was the right method for her to challenge the authorities in this, like, instance, like, if that's a good process. But regardless, yeah, I thought it was very, like, it looked like a pretty lame party that she crashed as well. With all the wigs and makeup and stuff, looked really bizarre. This did not look like the kind of kingdom I'd want to be hanging out in.
Well, So I think some of the various people try and justify his behavior by how he was treated by his dad, or how he was influenced or taught or raised by his dad.
Yes, in this movie they give him a backstory that wasn't there in the anime film to try to explain his dickishness. Yeah, so continue, sorry.
So I don't know if that excuses it, but, you know... certain pressures or in the moment or in front of these people who you're supposed to act a certain way in front of. It's the wrong thing to do, but maybe there's a little bit, not justification, but at least understanding on our part, and that, you know, deep down, more often than not, maybe he is a good guy if that can maybe be brought out by a beauty.
Yeah. I like that in this film they gave us a bit of a backstory. They gave us a bit of a context. This is what made him a bad person. And beneath that there is a sensitive sort of soul. And, like, it's more like, you know, losing his mother at a young age and things. So I think that sort of helped me get on board with the beast. But I do wonder if they gave that a little late. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure if they always chose the best times to do the flashbacks in this to keep the story flowing and stuff. But I do appreciate that backstory.
And what did you think of the beast in terms of the aesthetics? Did they capture the essence of the beast?
I think so. Yeah, I think it was quite a good job on the beast. I liked his horns. I thought they looked pretty cool.
The CGI, I thought, was great. I mean, it looks very realistic. I never thought was distracted by that. I thought it was pretty good. I thought maybe the face... some of his snout was a bit too goatee. Like, I don't know. In my mind, I had him a bit more of... I remember him being a bit more of a lion and less of a goat.
Yeah.
But I don't even know what he's supposed to be. He's a weird mixture.
Goatish. He's a picture from my picture book, Jonathan.
You can see the arm.
Not great for a podcast. Oh, but if you give us a...
There we go. Yeah, that looks like a bit more like a lion or a bear. A bear to me, maybe.
I see teeth are sticking out here. Like, I think maybe two of the fangs, the bottom fangs are taller. Anyway, it doesn't need to be exactly like the animal. But anyway.
There you go.
So I think the beast will
probably... I give it a B. I give it a B.
Yeah, maybe a bit too like a goat. Okay, so...
Belle's dad goes off to find a rose, gets sidetracked, ends up at the castle. Belle goes after him. Belle, what a selfless daughter. Throws him out of the cage, sacrifices herself to save her dad.
This is one of the reasons why Belle is my favorite Disney princess. She is the one I would go out with. Like, she's the one, she's my dream Disney princess, it's Belle. And one of the reasons...
She likes books more than you.
What, sorry?
She likes books more than you.
Yeah, but that's not a turn-off. I like that she's smart, and she's cultured, and she understands. Like, I think, like, because she's read so much, I think we'd have really interesting conversations. Like, and she loves stories, and I love stories. Like, she told me about things she'd been reading, and we can talk about them and have great discussions and things.
Yeah, well, as long as it's something they release on TV. Like, all right, you read the book, I'll watch Dexter, I'll watch Game of Thrones, and then we can reconvene.
I think she might get me into reading more, too. I don't know. I actually, the reading is another reason why I actually, like, am attracted to Belle. So it's the reading... And it's the selflessness that she actually is prepared to take the spot of her dad in that prison. She's someone who's often thinking of others. And even, like, as a prisoner in the castle, she'll often be, you know, like, being very nice to the candlesticks and cups and things like that.
So, yeah, so she takes his place and she's kind of trapped there and she starts interacting with the different, what's the term for them? So the objects, really. Things that shouldn't really move and talk, but do move and talk.
The servants. Well, I feel like they're a bit hard on themselves at one point, like, because it was really the beast that got the spell cast on all of them, and then, like, Mrs. Potts at one point's like, well, it's really all of our fault for letting it happen. Oh, like, what did you turn the lady away? Like, like, you were his servants, like, you weren't his... What his parents, but
well, who do we have? We have, let's see, Lumiere and Cogsworth, is it?
Yeah,
they're quite a funny duo.
Good duo.
And let me see, you have Mrs. Potts and Chip.
Chip, we love them.
Quite good too. And who is the Plumette. She's Lumiere's lover, the
Duster. She's great. One of my favourite scenes in the original Beauty and the Beast is when they go behind a curtain together and you just see a lot of, like, movement behind the curtain. They come with me behind the curtain. They were I think, as touchy-feely, if not more so, in the animated film than they were in this one.
And then we have, who is it? Who are the two people that are, there's the Madame Gardrobe or something? Who's the wardrobe?
There's the wardrobe, and there's the piano.
And they're in different rooms, and I guess they don't move enough to see each other anymore?
Yeah, they're like married. They were married, it looks like, and...
She was, I thought the wardrobe was perhaps like a little bit over the top, but I thought visually, the sort of the way that she flew out the clothes and dressed Belle, I thought visually she had that character, that the wardrobe had some good scenes.
Yeah. I like it. So it's very good.
So we like the servants. What did you think of the relationship between Beauty and the Beast? Because that's kind of the meat.
This is the big thing.
The meat of the story.
Both versions of the film have been criticized, and the story's criticized for being a bit of Stockholm syndrome. Like, you know, it's the captive falls in love with her captor. Mm. And is that an ethically good message for the film? Do you have any thoughts on that, Jonathan?
Do you think that encourages people to kidnap people and then say, oh, like in Beauty and the Beast, she'll fall in love with me eventually?
Yes, I guess so.
I see the logic. I don't know if there's a real risk there.
No. Is it a good love story, if that's what it is? Like, do we...
I guess you just have to look at it in context and what each character's intentions are. He never meant to kidnap her. Although maybe he would have kidnapped her if it had been her, not her dad, that had stolen the rose in the first place.
Yeah. She did steal a rose. Let's not... her dad did steal a rose from his garden. We must remember.
A kidnappable offence.
Yeah.
And I don't think... Although he needs to win someone's heart in order to be set free, I didn't think that... We didn't really get the sense that he was trying to trap women and forcing them to love him. She just kind of happened to kind of stumble in there. It was all kind of unplanned.
Yes. Well, you can, like, go, boy... He was an attractive woman to walk into my castle. Hey, let's kidnap her and she'll fall in love with me. Like, you don't need to pre-plan, like, it. But I'm sort of thinking what you are, like, a little bit. As thinking about it now, I feel like his intent was, like, he, like, often was the one not wanting. So, like, it was more the household items that were encouraging. Was sort of like, hey, maybe she'll like you. Why don't you, like, dress up nice and be nice to her? And he's like, oh, why bother? Like, he was very... like, he was not really trying to court her for a lot of the time she was in prison. And actually, he spent very little time with her for most of the time she was in prison. He was not forcing her to spend time with him. Like, because when she said she didn't want to go to dinner, it's not like he, like dragged her out. Like, she's on a United Airlines flight into the dining room. Like, she was allowed to stay in her room. So, I'm not trying to defend the kidnapping. And obviously, like, if you leave someone in the room without food, they then might choose to come and join you. But I didn't get from the Beast an intent to manipulate her feelings towards him. Because he seemed often to not think that a lot of these sort of romantic quest would even work.
Yeah, I think rather than trying to seduce her or win her over or manipulate her, really, if anything, he just sort of grew to tolerate her because they had sort of mutual interests. I think the first time they sort of start bonding somewhat is when they go to the library because she loves books and normally she has to go down and trade for something out of the 10 books that some guy has to read something she's already read before, and then all of a sudden she has this endless library and she's so excited, and I guess him seeing that in her enables him to kind of, you know, see the world through her eyes and sort of get a bit of a different perspective on things and maybe open up from his kind of cold shell that he's kind of built around himself as the Beast. So
I'm wondering also where we could argue maybe, and this is maybe a message of the movie, that she was actually a prisoner in her own town as well. Like, she was considered such an outcast, such a weirdo, such a, you know, and with a Gaston character in the town who is someone who's trying to manipulate her and get her to marry him and, like, do all these elaborate plots to try to, like, trick her or, like, to get her, force her to marry him when she didn't want to. So, where the Beast does not push it heavily, like, he doesn't push the romance ever really. Like, she's always the one taking the lead on the romance. And it probably was nice for her to get a book and not, like, walk out of the room with the book with like 10 people like going, hey, look at that weirdo bell with a book. Like, what a whack job. Like, so, yeah, I think regardless of, like, I think the him kidnapping her is problematic to the story to a degree for the romance. But what I do like about this, and what I like about this over a lot of the other Disney princess movies, is they don't start attracted to each other, probably either of them, and they both grow to love each other through getting to know. It's not like one of them falls head over heels for the other one, and then it's just them trying to convince the other. Like, they sort of, like, he learns to tolerate her, and she learns to find something sweet about him as well. And that's what I really like about this story. And it reminds me, Tangled is another Disney animated film where you have two characters do not start liking each other. And it's through their experiences, through their adventures, through the journey that they fall in love.
Yeah.
We give our thumbs up to the Beauty and the Beast. It's all okay in our mind. We're on board.
Essentially, her Belle's father comes back to the town, says, "Ah, we got to go get this beast." Gaston and LeFou go look for him. They get lost. They say, "Ah, screw you, old man." They come back without him. But then he makes his way back to the town. He's like, "Oh, they left me for dead." And they're like, "No, he didn't.
You're a madman."
Belle is able to find this out because the beast has given her a gift, I guess, of the, what is it? It's this kind of mirror that kind of lets her, I don't know exactly what the rules are, but basically she can see into other places.
I think you ask for it to show you someone or something and it will show you that thing at that point in time. So I can say, "Show me Jonathan," and then you go, it's all like Skype. Or FaceTime. It's not like just FaceTime. The person has to answer.
So I guess at this point we find, talking about their relationship, the Beast no longer wants to treat Belle like a prisoner because he says, you know, go to your dad. You're free. I'm not going to hold you here.
Yeah. So he's prepared to give up Belle. Which you could say that's the whole plan with Stockholm Syndrome. You then make it their choice and they choose to stay. But the dad was in trouble, so she didn't choose to stay. One other thing I want to touch on, this is probably my least favorite part of the movie and the thing I thought was the most bizarre and maybe also the biggest divergence from the original film, was he had a magic book which Belle could use to take him on a mystery date to wherever she wanted to go out with him. And she chose Paris to watch her mother die of the plague with him.
Yes. How much is the... Because Belle wanting to know more about her mother is a fairly important part of the live film. How much of that do you remember being in the animated?
None.
I wanted it to stay, I guess, as close to the original as possible. But if you're going to add something, at least have it make sense and it be sort of believable within that world and for those characters. And for me, it mostly did because... I don't know how old Belle is supposed to be, but she's still young, and having a parent that has passed is going to have a big impact on your life, and it would make sense that she would want to know more about that, and it would make sense that if the Beast could offer her a way to do that, would be a way for them... It's a somewhat... If we're giving the Beast the benefit of the doubt that he's, you know, it's like an honest, selfless thing to do, that he's doing it from that perspective, it is a way to show affection and to help, you know, Belle achieve that. And I thought, kind of learning about all the plague and etc. was, if not totally necessary, at least a somewhat interesting add-on, provided a little bit of character development.
Okay. Here's what I liked and here's what I didn't. I liked that it gave a bit of a backstory to Belle. And I liked the idea that there was something there about her mother. There's a reason she's just living with her dad. I think that adds some backgrounds and context. So I liked that. And I thought that was a good, that her mother had passed away was a really good part of the story that helped me be more invested in her and all those sorts of things. I didn't like, one, that there was a magic book that took them to watch it. And I think partly because I feel like in some ways that would have been more powerful if the revelation had come from her dad or something like that, or if it was a bit more just subtle. I feel like, and this is my problem with the movies, and I feel like they over-explain things. Hmm. And they went too much through that sort of stuff.
Well, I didn't really have a problem with the magic book. I mean, there's already a magic mirror. It's not really sort of...
Yeah.
It's not really... Yeah, it's within sort of the possibilities of the magic that is in Beauty and the Beast. So, and I, as much as Belle and her dad, I guess, you know, that's an important relationship, the Beast is a much more interesting character. Their relationship is more important. And so I understand why it came from the Beast.
I just think it would have been better if there was still, like, a little bit of... Like, they overexplained so much. Like, I would have liked a bit more mystery behind that rather than us having to see a whole scene that explained everything. And I feel like that was my biggest problem with this movie, is probably the need to explain a lot.
I don't know. Well, I don't know if it was so much, like, over-explaining it. To me, it was just sort of answering a question, because they kind of pepper throughout the early stages, like, tell me more about Mum. What was she like? You know there's that question of what happened, and then towards the end you get the answer. So,
I'm not sold on this thing.
So, well, anyway, Belle is free. Beast lets Belle go. She goes back and the town. They go, nah. Your old man's crazy. Turns out you're crazy too. She's like, nope, not crazy. Got this magic thing that shows a picture of a beast. And they're like, huh. Well, you're still crazy because you don't want to kill the beast. So they go off. They're like, all right, off to get the pitchforks. We're off to kill Shrek. And, It's up to Belle to escape and go save the beast.
Boy. Yeah, no, so that's pretty exciting. There's a big battle scene where the whole castle's, like, bits and pieces, like the Chip and Cogsworth and Lumiere all fighting all the mob that's come. That's pretty exciting. And that's a pretty good scene, the fight scene, actually.
Yeah, you've got... Yeah, it is funny just watching the servants fight them. Like, the piano is, like, flicking keys at them, and I think Mrs. Potts pours hot tea on someone. It was kind of, like, good action, but kind of comical as well.
Which is also a great part of the original, that scene. That's one of my favourite scenes of the kid of the original, was all the, like, ovens and pianos and everything fighting the thing. And I actually think the anime film's done a bit better. Like, the barricade they make in the anime books even bigger, like, they just had the piano in front of the door, but I remember in the anime put them, like, putting all these cupboards and blocks of woods, and they, like, build such a big, like, pile of furniture blocking that door at the beginning. Like, I love that scene in both movies.
So this kind of culminates with a bit of a showdown between Gaston and the Beast.
Epic. On the roofs, jumping from steeple to steeple or whatever.
And it seems like the Beast is kind of depressed. He's fighting back out of instinct, but his heart's not really in it.
Because Belle, like, the person he cared about the most, she sent him off. Like, she didn't love him. She told the town, there's this horrible beast, we've got to go attack him.
But
in his mind, that's what's happening.
But he gets his pet back when he sees Belle. I mean, it looks like he kind of gets to a point where he could kill Gaston, but I guess he's part of being the new Beast. Beast 2.0 is that, yep. He shows forgiveness, or what's the word when you let someone live? Anyway, choosing not to kill Gaston, but that Gaston, he's a sneaky one. This is not Gaston 2.0. He shoots the Beast, this old-timey looking gun. But fortunately for us, if you're not a Gaston fan, the bridge collapses and he just plummets. Yeah. Plummets to his death.
My biggest disappointment there was Gaston didn't get to see the Belle, like, I don't know, kiss the Beast or them, like, you know, like, really, I would have loved him to see them get together.
Yeah, you did sort of know that that she cared for him more than... that Belle cared for the Beast more than him, Gaston. But, yeah, there wasn't that kind of single moment where it's like the dagger in Gaston's heart.
Yeah.
I can't remember how it compared to the animated film, but when he falls, I'm like, that's a long way. He's dead. They don't really show people dying all that much in Disney movies, I guess.
Yeah, I can't remember the fall in the Disney movie as well. I think I do vaguely remember Gaston falling off the castle, though. I do think that was similar. We'll need to double check. I'm very keen to watch Beauty and the Beast again, the 91 version. I feel like I should have watched it before this podcast.
Yeah. Well, I guess in perhaps a little bit of foreshadowing for the return of Jafar, it appears the Beast is dead.
Yes.
and the last rose petal falls. What a disaster. All the servants, they freeze. They're permanently objects. They're permanently inanimate now. Which is kind of the same as dying, I guess, if you just sort of disappear when you're frozen. Yeah. But Belle, she's still there with the Beast. She tells him that he loves him.
And then the sorceress comes back, the woman.
The enchantress's curse is undone.
She gives a bit of a nod or something, like, okay, we'll put one of these petals back on the rose. But close enough. It wasn't a hard time. It wasn't a hard 2 days. Like, they got an extension.
And the spell is undone, magic, and the Beast is returned to a human. And there was real potential there for sort of like a surprise reveal. Like, you know, the Beast was all along was, you know, Matt Damon. Or...
Oh, yeah.
But, not some nobody. Probably some some stage actor that can actually sing or something. Probably some guy with talent, not just a random celebrity. But, that's probably better, I think, long term. Because even though Belle had sort of loved the Beast, I feel like, you know, going forward, the fact that the Beast is now human, he's a prince again, that's probably, you know, that's a smoother road to go down, I think.
Yeah, I is good.
Yeah. And then we celebrate, servants back to life as well, big dance.
They all sing their favourite song from the movie, Tales of His Time.
Josh Gad is free to be as gay as he wants to be.
He can dance with a man now as well as a woman. It's all happening. It's happy days in the castle. Okay, a few beats we need to touch on. What do you think of the musical numbers and stuff in the movie?
I like them. I think you had a lot of the originals. They had... Be Our Guest, which was very elaborate, almost kind of like psychedelic at times with the animation. I think just in terms, just generally, this applies to sort of the film as a whole, but also the music. It just kind of like captured the spirit of the original, and the same songs that I like to hum and sing watching the original are the same ones that I hummed and sang after the live version. So I think that's a success on its part.
Yeah, I thought the musical numbers were very good. There were some original songs written for this version well. And I do feel like they did feel a little different than the, like, you know, I was meant to check this before the podcast, but I don't feel like Alan Menken, who wrote the original Beauty and the Beast songs, wrote the other song. And I feel like you could tell a little bit the ones that weren't, like, you know. But I thought the ones from the animated movie were done really well. Not quite as good, but they were really, you know, the Beauty and the Beast dancing to Telltale's Time. I thought it was a beautiful scene, a beautiful number. I thought Belle in the Village at the beginning. So I think they did a really good job on those musical numbers.
Let's see. Alan Menken did the original.
The greatest Disney songwriter of all. Like, you know, he did Aladdin. He did The Little Mermaid.
All music composed by Alan Menken. So, for the new one. So, there you go. They did. So, that's good.
Oh, so they did. Good they job, got him Alan. Back. So, yeah, no. That was a good song. Did Alan Menken them again, I guess they did seem a bit different than the style of the first ones today.
Yeah, they did add it. There were a couple. I know there was an Evermore song.
They're chasing the guy. They want an Oscar for original song for this. They can't do it if they just do songs from the first movie.
I didn't mind. I didn't know if it needed new songs, but the new songs didn't bother me, so I'll call that a wash.
I saw this movie with my friend Mel. Members of the podcast might know her as Bass's wife. And she commented, and I think it was a very fair comment, on the fashion in this movie. I thought we both thought the dresses that Belle had were pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I did like the costume design. I thought I'm glad that Stanley Tucci didn't have to change from the Hunger Games. He could just walk from one set to the other. That was...
Yeah.
Efficient budgeting. Overall, I thought it looked great.
And a fact someone told me, my friend Jasmine told me yesterday, was that the shoes that Belle wore were... Emma Watson requested those shoes because she... So Belle's an outdoor farms, like farming girl sort of thing. She doesn't want to wear like high heel, like really prissy shoes or whatever. She wants to wear like, you know, nice boots. I thought that was a good choice by Emma Watson.
So Emma Watson chose those shoes.
Yes.
Well, yeah, so... if this acting thing doesn't pan out, maybe she has a career in costume design.
Yeah, I go. She better get thanked by the costume designer if they win Best Costumes at the Oscars. Which I think they will win Best Costume at the Oscars, actually. I think those dresses on Belle were fantastic. And I do like... This is another reason Belle's my favourite princess. I'm more attracted to the girl next door than the supermodel sort of look. With any girls out there that are interested in wooing me, it's more the girl next door look. Like,
yeah, just plain Jane, girl next door, yeah. Emma Watson. Just, you know, I don't need anyone that's going to be on the cover of a magazine or, you know, just your run-of-the-mill Emma Watson will do me just fine. glad to hear you have realistic expectations met.
I mean, just like, you know, down to earth clothes, not fancy shoes, just, you know, like nice smile, not overly made up and stuff like that. I don't know, just like, you know, just the girl next door, just the girl next door. You know. I always think, like, when girls have all their hair up for weddings and things, they look stunning, they look amazing. But sometimes I feel like, oh, they look really nice before that, too. Like, so anyway. bit of a ramble. Should we give our verdict?
All right, let's wrap it up.
Can I start with mine?
You seem keen. Who am I? Who am I to take that away from you?
Here was my big thought, and this came to me while I was watching the movie. I felt like I was watching a Beatles cover band.
A Beatles cover band? Okay.
Right? They're playing all the songs I like. I'm having a good time. It's like good atmosphere. I'm enjoying myself. But I'm not watching the Beatles.
That's fair. I get where you're going.
And I feel like the thing that makes this different to them was like, I feel like everyone would be having this experience, but some people love Emma Watson so much. It's like if, you know, like Emma Watson was in a Beatles cover band. There'd be some people would be so excited to see Emma Watson do the Beatles song that they might get caught up in the hype and go, oh, this is even better than the Beatles. Right? Because they just love Emma Watson so much. So I feel like she's a bit of a wild card because people love Emma Watson. Like, she is, like, there's some of my friends who, like, she can do no wrong. And I can sort of see why. She's amazing. Like, I love Emma Watson too. But I'm probably not as high on her as the original Beauty and the Beast. So, it's no, like, I just think the original Beauty and the Beast, one of the greatest animated movies of all time, the greatest Disney, arguably the greatest non-Pixar Disney film, of non-Pixar animated film of all time. It's incredible, and this just is fun, but it's not. It's, I don't think they're comparable. Like, I don't think they're in the same league. So I'll give this one a 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Well, I enjoyed this film a lot. I thought it stayed pretty faithful to the original, both just in terms of plot and music, etc. But I think what it really nailed was just the tone and the atmosphere and the feeling that it gives you while you watch it and when you walk away from the film. And I think that's probably, out of everything, just go, you can analyze, you can criticize, whatever. That was really the goal.
Oh, sorry. Like, if they bump the thing off the computer and start playing the audio book again.
Well, that was not what Matt was supposed to do. But what the film was supposed to do was really, it was just, it had one thing to accomplish. Did it give me that feeling? And it did. So I think on a major level, it succeeded. I think the point that kind of parallels your Beatles analogy, that I quite like, is, if though in the future I want the Beauty and the Beast, you know, I got a free, rainy, stormy afternoon and I go, oh, it would be great to watch the Beauty and the Beast right now. Am I going to pop in the animated version? Am I going to pop in the live version? And it's quite an easy choice. I'm going to pop in the animated version.
Yes. Applause for me.
But overall, I liked it. And even if it doesn't compare, it's competing with greatness or trying to copy greatness. And even if you get quite close but don't get there, that's still pretty good. So I enjoyed it a lot. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think we lost Matt. We lost Matt. Matt just goes, nah, 8 out of 10. That's way too good a score for Beauty and the Beast. We'll see if we can get him back real quickly. I think he was on his phone. My guess is his phone died. Maybe he doesn't know what score I gave it, and he'll live in he'll have to live in suspense. A cliffhanger for one of the... Normally, if anyone's going to be left in a cliffhanger, it's going to be the audience, not one of the podcasters. This might be a screen verdict first. And we're back, as promised. Matt, now, I was talking to the audience while you were away, and I didn't know how much you hurt. I didn't know if you were left on a cliffhanger. So
you said, I'm going to give it an 8, and then cut out. So I don't know if you were going to say 8.5 or 8.
Oh, so a narrow range, but a cliffhanger nonetheless.
You liked it more than me.
I gave it an 8.0. So
okay. Oh, boy, when you said point, that made me think you were going to say 5, really. You sneak.
So there you go. Between the two of us, we quite liked it. Interested to hear what you think, because we know, I think overall it's been well received, but you know, could, people have strong opinions on Beauty and the Beast, so we definitely like to hear your thoughts. So just hit us up at facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast.
Podcast.
And let us know what you thought.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? You know how I said it was the first movie I ever saw in the cinema? For Gold Derby, I was interviewing Juno Temple, an actress from the show Vinyl, right?
Mm-hmm.
To talk about that show, which unfortunately got cancelled. But she said how much a fan she was of movies, and I asked her what her favourite movie of all time was, and she said, like, some French version of Beauty and the Beast, like, Beyond Zussure, like, something really, like, cultured and stuff. I said, oh, that's funny, because the first movie I ever saw in the cinema was the Disney Beauty and the Beast. And she said that was the first movie she saw in the cinema too.
Wow.
What, like, a coincidence.
That is statistically unlikely.
But the one person I interview where I share that fact with had the same first movie.
It'd be, you know what would make that story even more interesting? If she was 60 years old.
Yeah. So I believe she was my age. Juno Temple is on, 27 years, born in 1989. And I'll, so there you go. It's pretty much my age. I thought to play us out, Jonathan, one more page of the audiobook. I'll pick a it's a 15-minute audiobook, Jonathan. At what time stamp do you want me to, pick?
Cool. Let's go 15 minutes. Let's go... 10:30.
Okay, 10:30, and we'll have one page until they turn the page. I think this is the actual version I own that I was able to find. Let's see. So, catch you guys later.
Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next week, and we hope you enjoy this page from the Beauty and the Beast audiobook.
You showed her a beautiful library.
I can't believe it. I've never seen so many books in all my life.
The Beast smiled for the first time. Then it's yours. That evening, Mrs. Potts and the other objects watched Belle read a story to the Beast. They were filled with hope that the Beast and Belle were falling in love.
It's the sound of two people connecting.
Gradually, the mood in the castle began to change. Belle and the Beast read together, died together, and played together in the snow. They even had a snowball fight. Belle watched the big awkward Beast trying
to editorializing the narration with some laughter.
That he had a kind and gentle side to him. Something that she hadn't seen before. In turn, the Beast began to hope that Belle would begin to care for him. Tidied his room, bathed, and dressed up for the evening. He was overjoyed when Belle taught him how to dance. That evening.
Okay, there's meant to be a page turn there. I found the page on the book, so there you go.
If you'd like more Beauty and the Beast audiobook recordings, we could make that a weekly housekeeping segment.
Or just become friends with my friend and they might get that for you for your birthday one year.
Well. Did that feel like a Beatles cover band?
Well, I feel like since they were using, like, it was more like a DJ playing Beatles songs on the mix, right? Like, because that was the actual actors from the movie that they were playing sound bites from.
The remix.
Yeah.
Very good. We hope you enjoyed that. We already said thanks for listening. But you deserve two thanks. That's how much we appreciate you guys. And we hope you tune in next week.
Yeah, cool, bye.